photography enthusiasts, just wanted to give a little note. We recorded this episode on an online platform because my guest and I are too far apart to have an in-person conversation. We wanted to let you know that the quality may not be as good as our regular episodes, but the conversation was way too valuable not to share. Anyway, we hope you enjoy everything our guest has to share. Thanks.
Okay, so now you're going to take us through a process that you've done before, an example of concept.
All right. So, so going back to, I think, so for like the last project I did with Sanchige, she had osteogenesis imperfecta. So for her, she came to me based on another project I did, and she's like, oh, I would love for you to tell my story. And I was like, all right, cool. So we met up after all the rudimental questions, like, who are you? Where did you come from? What's your family structure like? And I feel like all of these questions helped me to get an idea of who she is, because at the end of the day, and this is good for client work as well, because at the end of the day, when you're photographing someone, it is my opinion that you should be photographing who they are, delivering to the audience their essence. So as much information as I can get about who she is, and then as much information I can get about what she has, the condition she has, can help me to start the conceptual phase. So after I found out all that about her and her condition, I remember being, okay, so there was a point where she was born in something, she didn't know it, she was always sad about it, skipping school, sorry, because she had to be in the hospital. And then there was a part of her story where she started to accept who she was, accept that this condition that she has. And then there's a part of the story where you see she's now fully confident and she's no longer defined by what she has. And so there's a narrative there. And so my the process of concepting for me was to tell that narrative of realizing that you have something that you weren't fond of, learning to accept this thing that you aren't fond of, and overcoming this thing that you're not fond of, you know what I mean? And it became a three-part series. So you had the part where she was sad, and I also wanted people to have a literal sense of what her disease was, and it's a bone disease. So in my head, I saw x-ray scans, because she told me about an x-ray scan that she had that showed all of her broken limbs and all the reinforcements on her bones in her body. And I was like, oh, that'd be so cool for people to physically see and understand that, hey, she's walking, but she's not walking on her own that much. Like there's things in her body that's supporting her right now. So when you see her, like, she is a fighter, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I had the x-rays in the background illuminated. That I had no idea if it would work. I was all a gamble. So I had the x-rays, I'd like stitched some x-rays together with hers being in the center. I put some lights behind it, and then I had her in front of it. I had the light hitting her. That was the first set of shots. Then at second stage, I had her with the x-rays on the ground, like, you know, just, they're now falling from behind her, now on the ground. And the bones that she had is now on the ground as well. And she has her favorite flowers. One of her favorite colors is yellow. And so we had yellow roses. She loves roses as well. She had them held up in the air. And that was the acceptance stage. Then came the stage of flourishing. So she loves lotuses. She loves the idea of the lotus, you know, being a plant that emerges from the murky pond waters, you know. And so I love the idea of something emerging. And so when she told me that she loved lotuses and the reason why she loved the lotus, I was like, oh, what do you think about you emerging from a lotus? And she loved that idea. And so the x-rays are blue. So they then became the water source. And we had a huge lotus in the center that she emerged out of, and the lotuses were made out of paper. And we had smaller lotuses to create that pond effect. And she was dressed in a blue bodysuit and a crown, and looking beautiful and very sexy, you know, very confident. And that's how I created the narrative for that particular series. And it was well received. Like, people loved the transition and the story that it told in between, actually. Oh, and then other points is she has scars from the different surgeries she did. So in each of the shots, you could see parts of various scars that she had, yeah? Which is very important as well for people to see those old wounds, you know?
Yeah. Okay, that sounds absolutely beautiful. I hope, like, there's somewhere where we can see this. Is it on your website?
Yeah, it's on my website. It's in my blog section.
Okay.
So you can go to www.jickrubenvisuals.com/blogs. I'm pretty sure you can put this in the captions.
Definitely. I'll definitely put the link there because that sounds absolutely amazing and I can't wait to go and look at it because, wow. So you actually just mentioned that you have a blog. I did get a chance to look at it. So what made you start writing on photography and tell us a bit about that.
So this is going to also go back to another question you asked about bringing back creative processes from art. So there was a point in my life where I was writing a little bit too. So like I was doing poems, I was doing short stories. So it's just that for me, writing doesn't come that naturally. I have to be in a place. However, when I started doing these passion projects, I want people to fully understand what was going on in my mind when I was coming up with things. And I wanted to share more about, you know, the process like that. So I started writing the blog. And it was also slightly because there was this Jamaica Blog Awards. Jamaica Blog Awards. So I also started writing because of that too. But unfortunately, when I started writing, they stopped the awards. So it was like, whatever. But I still continued. And I enjoy writing in that capacity. Mm-hmm. I sometimes will maybe write at one point every 16 blue moons. But I enjoy the writing process because it comes from such a pure place for me. And it helps to connect with my audience a little bit more for them to fully understand what I was perceiving with my project. And it helps because sometimes, for example, for my awareness projects, the images can't be too literal for various reasons. And it's a good place to get them to come and find out more beyond the images. So for osteogenesis imperfecta, you can't explicitly put that in the photo. So it's there in the writing for you to read and for you to fully understand what is happening in the photos. Yeah. That's really where the blog is coming from.
Okay, that's amazing. I completely understand that because sometimes, I'll be honest, sometimes I'll look at abstract art or photography and I'll be like, okay, I'm not sure I get this one. It looks great, but I'm not sure I get why. So yeah, I understand where you're coming from. Okay, so as I was like getting ready for this interview, I got to read a bit on what you've written. So one lesson you've shared before is on the importance of working on one project at a time instead of trying to juggle many things at the same time. So what got you to learn that lesson? Because we're all out here trying to do the most and get the most done. So what brought you to that point?
Can I tell you that I totally forgot I said that? And I'm happy you brought that up because I feel like I'm at that place now again where I need to remember that.
Yeah.
Because I'm currently working on like 3 projects. And when I say I am overwhelmed right now, I am overwhelmed by these 3 projects because it's 3 projects plus work.
Yeah.
It is so important to really focus on one because we're not God.
Yeah, definitely.
We don't have, and we're definitely not, you know, we don't have I don't know if it exists, but we don't have the fund of youth, the well of youth. So we have to manage our energy quite well. And also I feel like from a mental standpoint, if you're able to put 100% into one project, that one project will be far superior versus you splitting that 100% equally across several projects. I don't want to say you're half-assing, but it's almost like you're half-assing the project. You're not giving it your full attention. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like something is going to give at some point, something is going to give and you're going to be like, ah, I wish I had more time to do that. But yeah, you could have given it more time.
Yeah.
If you had just focused on that alone, you know, but
sometimes
life doesn't work that way. Sometimes you end up in situations like I'm in right now where I had started a project and I was hoping to finish it by a specific time, but because of certain limitations, wasn't finished. And then it spiraled into when you had to start the next project.
Yeah.
And so now you're split between those two things. One project that is not finished and one project that you're just starting. And it is important to, what I'm relearning right now is the importance of taking breaks and just carving out specific times in your day when you focus on one specific project and just that project alone.
Yeah.
Don't try to multitask and say, oh, I have to call this person for that project and I need to do this for this project and try to do that all in the same time because it is really exhausting. So set up your time. So at 12 o'clock, I'm going to have this meeting with so-and-so about the editing. At 2 o'clock, I'm gonna start editing some other stuff for this project. And at 10 o'clock, I'm going to, you know, start conceptualizing for that project. And that's the bit. I find that I've been able to more manage the project that I'm working on right now versus before. And I was just like, everything is in front of my face and I just don't know what to do. My stress level is up. And I'm just dying, drowning, you know. But if you have the opportunity, just work on one project and do it to the best of your ability.
Yeah.
And you'll see how much better that end result is when you do it that way.
Okay. So you actually do quite a bit of portrait photography. It's one of your like main niches. And many of your clients completely just looked this up on LinkedIn, but many of your clients have said working with you was relaxed, tension-free, comfortable. And just how did you manage to get that to be the vibe of your photography sessions? Because honestly, I actually, personally, I do real estate photography and I did it so that I wouldn't have to deal with that interaction of trying to make someone else comfortable. Because as a portrait photographer, you have to create an environment where they're comfortable and try and get comfortable yourself. At least for me, for someone who's like me, who's trying to learn, it can be quite tense. You want them to be comfortable, but you're also really uncomfortable. So it's just a bad situation all around. So how have you managed to do that?
For me, it has a lot to do with my personality. I mean, I strongly believe I'm an introvert, but people have always said that I'm a good people person. And so... I just have that personality where I allow people to be themselves. I allow people to be completely comfortable. I love to give jokes. I love to make my clients laugh. Breaking the ice is a very important thing to do. What helps is meeting with the client before the day of the shoot, having that conversation before the day of the shoot. So, for example, right now I can't see my clients face to face before, so I'll have a Zoom call with them, I'll have a WhatsApp call with them and just wrap with them, you know, tell them how my process is, tell them that, you know, we're going to this location, we're going to do this and that, get them comfortable. Sometimes I'll send them reference images so they can practice before, you know. I bring music on my sets with me, so we're playing music and I'm hardly ever playing music that I like. I'm playing the music that they like. So it gets them chill, gets them comfortable. And I work with people that are very chill as well. So I don't bring people on my set that are tense. Like I'm not bringing an assistant that's miserable and is going to create a very negative environment.
Yeah.
All these things matter, you know? So having that conversation with them, making them laugh, getting to know them, playing music, stuff like that. And, you know, I don't often do it, but even just showing them the image while you're taking and just, you know, boost their confidence. So sometimes they're insecure and they look very well, they look very good. So it's a simple thing as, oh, you look good, honey. Or, you know, you're looking great, you're looking hot, or you're looking handsome and you're looking very macho. The ladies are going to love you, you know, when they see these pictures. That builds their morale and builds their confidence, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're quite comfortable after that.
Yeah, okay. All right.
And try not to be too tense. Like, just be relaxed, you know. Dress comfortable, but still be somewhat professional. Sometimes when I see photographers dressed all too fancy and all this gear, it's like, you're very daunting. You look like you're coming from war. Like, relax it a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
This podcast is sponsored by Davasha Media Academy. If you'd like to improve your skills or become a professional photographer, photo editor, videographer, or video editor, then this is for you. Davasha Media Academy offers beginner, elementary, and intermediary courses that are tailored for whatever level you're at. You will also have the opportunity to go on photography trips to put in practice everything you're learning. Being a student at Davasha Media Academy also gives you the chance to be mentored by experienced photographers even after you're done with the training. We are located at CPA Center, which is along Thika Road next to KCA University. Reach out to us by calling 0724-500-574.
So you've had the opportunity to represent the country twice abroad. Can you tell us about that? In what capacity? Where did you get to represent your country?
Nice, yeah, for sure. So I've had the privilege of going overseas twice to represent Jamaica as a photographer. So the first time was part of a trip or a group of artists. We were part of an initiative called the Up Purpose trip, and we went to Germany and Spain, and our goal was to just share our culture with the world in the different genres that we represented. So I was a photographer, so I went over there mostly to show my concert images and as well as it wasn't my concert images. I had some portraits I had taken when I was working with the USAID. We had gone around the country documenting different type of farmers. And I had taken some shots that I really liked for myself. And I also had some photos from my early black and white conceptual portrait days that I had liked. And I had printed a couple of them. And we were going to different concerts. So we went to Reggae Jam, Scandaloo's event, and we went to Rotterdam Sunsplash. These are three big stage shows or festivals in Europe. And we also had exhibitions. So I had my very first exhibition in Berlin, which was quite interesting. It was my first time mounting my work on a wall and, you know, having people come in and see it and talk about it. And it was quite interesting to play the role of fly on the wall. So I used to do that where I play fly on the wall, where I just watch people. I dressed very low key. And so people didn't really know who I was. I didn't know I was an artist. And so I just listened to them. I was like, oh, so what do you think about this one? And they'll tell me what they thought about the images. And I'd be like, oh, okay. I'm the photographer, actually. And they'd be like, oh, wow, you are? You know? And so we did that. And I was, in Germany and Spain. It was a really good experience. Especially since when I went to Spain, which is where Rotterdam Sunsplash is held, I had the opportunity to be one of their official photographers representing Jamaica for this. It's a 7-day festival, by the way. And we were sleeping in tents. It was also my first time sleeping in a tent and experiencing a concert that way. And it was really cool, you know, I'd seen all these major acts come from Jamaica, you know, performing on a major stage, and also all these other international acts that I've never seen before, you know, sharing the same space with my, you know, Jamaican artist, and meeting all the interesting people that I met. I've met some really amazing people. Some of them are still friends with me right now. And they asked me, so when are you coming back to Europe, Jake? Like, we need you in Germany, we need you in Spain. I've met some people from Italy and they're like, you're not coming to Italy. I'm like, yeah, but I gotta go to Africa first though.
And Karibu, you know, and then in Kenya.
For sure. I wish. COVID though, but as soon as I can, I'm coming home. I've never been home and I want to come home. Okay. You know, it's been a 2-year thing for me. I've been wanting to come home. But the second opportunity I had, it's probably of more notoriety, is the Art Basel exhibition. So Art Basel is, if you don't know, it's one of the biggest art festivals in the world. I think it's held in 3 countries, but the primary one is held in Miami in the United States, and it's held every December. And in 2018, oh, by the way, the time I went to Europe, that was in 2015. So yeah, in 2018, I went to be a part of the Art Basel process or experience. And that was because of a dear friend of mine, photographer friend of mine, David Muir. He suggested me to a curator who he puts on an event called Let There Be Reggae. And it's an event that celebrates, it's a one of a kind event that celebrates reggae music, dancehall music, Jamaican culture at Art Basel. And I had the opportunity to exhibit, I think, 24 of my concert images there, and it was well attended. It was a 2-day event. It was overwhelming, you know, because it's my first time exhibiting in the States. It's my first time having a showcase that had so many people from the music industry overseas attending. We had the consulate. Oh my God, I'm going to mess up this title. So I'm not even going to bother. But it was a lot of people there that came through, and they really praised my work. I was really proud of my exhibition, my showcase. And it also featured another Jamaican as well. She is a dancehall choreographer, and her pieces were on dancehall styling and clothing throughout the years. And we had this couple came from Israel, and they had artwork that was inspired by our old poster board dance parties or dance session poster boards that we used to have in Jamaica. And they kind of took that and made it their own style, add their twist to it and made it their own style. So it was nice to have that in the space as well. And we became a family, you know, like that's what I love about these experiences, being able to travel overseas and representing your country and, you know, just representing yourself as an artist. You get to meet other talented artists, you get to network, and you're extending your art family basically. So I still speak to everyone from that exhibition. Every now and then I'll talk to the promoter and ask him how he's doing. It's been, 3 years now? So even up to the other day, I messaged him, asked him how did COVID affect, you know, him not being able to, like, how does he feel that COVID affected the fact that he wasn't able to keep the exhibition this year, which was 2020, and stuff like that, you know? Yeah.
Wow, those must have been like really surreal moments for you, like getting to have your work. Yeah, those are some pretty amazing achievements. So being a photographer, there are those really high moments and great achievements and amazing experiences. But there are those like super low moments where you feel like, oh, are we gonna keep doing this really? Can you share with us one moment like that and how you're able to overcome that?
Well, there's a running joke between me and my friend, Yannick Reed. He's also another talented Jamaican photographer. He is Protégé's creative director and personal photographer. And every few years I'll tweet, well, I first started it on Facebook when everybody was on Facebook. I'd be like, yeah, I'm giving up on photography. I'm quitting. I can't bother this anymore. I'm going to retire. So there's a running joke with that between me and him. Every year I'm going to retire. But in 2016, though, to 2017, is probably the roughest time of my life. And because I was going through a lot, I had a major car accident in 2016. I wasn't able to work for like 2 months because of how bad the injuries were. And it really put a lot of things into perspective for me. It realized just how dependent on my physical well-being photography is. And the fact that I wasn't able to hold my camera for 2 months, I wasn't able to make any money. And it was just like, wow, I could have like lost my arm and my career is over, you know? And then around the same time, I was just going through a lot mentally. I wondered if this is what I was meant to do and if I was supposed to continue this, because it didn't seem feasible at the time. Because who knows, like I can enter into an accident and that'd be it. Thankfully, around that time is when I started to do my passion projects. So that kind of held me up a bit. And the first passion project I did was with a friend of mine. Well, she became my friend. Her name is Jodianne. And that project happened because of my best friend. She knew Jodianne and knew of her condition. And unfortunately, Jody and I became really good friends, but then she passed because of the condition. And so that really threw me off the rails. Like, I was very sad. And then that same year, I lost my grandma, who meant the world to me. And she was like my light. You know, she was the reason why I was doing everything I was doing. So it was like for a couple of months, I was just like, why am I doing this? I questioned myself a lot. I don't think a lot of people knew this, actually. But I felt like quitting. I felt like giving up. I felt like there was no reason to continue living life, you know, because I lost a really good friend of mine who was pushing me. And I lost my grandma, who was my source and inspiration, which then brings me to a very important lesson I learned in that time period, is that you should never depend on anybody to be your source of inspiration, to be your source of light, to be your source of anything. It is good to have people to help you, but everything that you're going to do in life should come from within. So your light should be within, your source of inspiration should be within. And I had to learn that lesson the hard way. And when I did learn that lesson, that's when things definitely pivoted upwards for me. And I became a much better photographer, a much better person. I learned how to handle my emotions better. I learned things about myself I didn't know existed, you know, through those two years. And wanted to give up. I meant, like, I was ready to pack up my bags. I was ready to give up. I just didn't know. My problem was, I didn't know what I was going to do next if I was to give up. That was my problem. And that's what kept me going. It's like, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do, so I'm going to have to keep doing this until I figure it out. But then, you know, I got past that process. I am definitely a way better photographer and a way better person. And my projects have evolved a lot because of that journey, you know. I'm able to be more connected with the people that I'm telling their stories. I'm able to give off myself more to others. I'm able to love others better, you know, care. I'm able to be more considerate to myself. That was the biggest thing that I learned, is being considerate with yourself, because I can be the most harshest critic to myself. I can tear down myself, and for the dumbest of reasons. And I learned that was not helping my cause.
Yeah.
And so self-compassion is something that I practice daily. So if I do a shoot and I wasn't able to do it to the best of my ability, I'm like, hey, you're human. You're not Superman. And even Superman has his weaknesses, you know?
Yeah.
Even Jesus, if you believe in Jesus, was tempted to do certain things, you know? So you just need to remember that, you know, I am the son of God, you know, so,
yeah,
and that's what kept me moving. And that's where I am today.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's really, really amazing. And I'm so glad to hear about how you were able to get through that and the lessons you learned coming out of it. And I feel like you've touched on something that impacts so many people, maybe not at the same degree that you experienced it, but even in a minuscule degree, like doing it for the gram, like your inspiration and your sense of self-worth as a photographer comes from how many likes or shares you get and how many people follow you. Some people open their phone, they find there's no notification on follows or likes or shares, and they're like, yeah, I suck. And that's the saddest thing. So I think what you mentioned is so important to so many people today, to be able to find your self-worth in yourself and not being dependent on others to affirm you, which is great when they do, but they're not there all the time. So you need to be able to
push. For sure.
Yeah. So that's pretty amazing. Those are some really great lessons. Yes.
Yeah, before you go on, I just want to, like, I had this conversation with my mentor the other day, I think 2 days ago, actually, about this, the exact same thing, about how pressuring social media is on us as creatives nowadays. Like, we feel the need to post, not because we want to post, not because we feel like the work is of a level for us that we want to post. We're posting just to please other people, to please social media. And it is very draining. Like, when you're looking at your work, if you're going to post your work, it should satisfy you first. You should be able to look at that photograph and be like, could I have done better with this photograph? And if I could have done better with this photograph, does it really represent me? Does it really represent, is it something I want to put out to the world? And these are questions that we need to ask ourselves, you know what I mean? Like, why am I posting this? Yeah. Am I posting this because I want 10,000 likes, or am I posting this because this is who I am and this is what I want to show the world, you know? Because I was actually watching a documentary on this photographer. She shot large format on large format Polaroid cameras. And she said for years, people didn't recognize her, but she knew what she wanted and she was going for what she wanted. And it's not until now, recently, that she has retired from photography because Polaroid is no longer around to supply the materials that she needs, that she's getting people looking at her work and seeing the beauty in her work. Yeah. You know, so sometimes this whole thing of instant gratification boggles us down. And what you should focus on is what makes you happy and that alone, because there will come a day when people are going to see the work for what it is and what it represents for you and for others, you know? Mm-hmm. Don't worry about what people think about the work now. Like, for example, when I started black and white photography, everybody was like, why are you shooting black and white? But yet now people praise me for my black and white photography. And when I don't post a black and white photo, they're like, what happened to the black and white photos? I literally had someone message me on Instagram, like, I realized you broke your black and white stories. What happened? Like, they look forward to my black and white work. No.
Yeah.
You know, so stick to the process, do what you love, and everything else will come. Unless you're in a situation where you need the money, then fine. But if you're doing it as a passion, if you're doing it as art, stick to it. It will get its praise, its external praise eventually, but keep that internal praise, because you're doing it for you, not for anybody else. At least that's what I think you should be doing.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with you on that. It's so important to actually enjoy doing what you're doing and enjoy what it is you're creating, not just because it's the trending thing right now. To be able to look at something and be like, yeah, nobody else might get it, but you know what? I get it and I know what it means to me and I completely see the value in it. And if anyone else sees a value in it, that's great. But for me right now, I think that this is meaningful to me. And I've definitely had to implement that in my own life. Just sitting down and self-reflecting and seeing what's important to me and trying to kind of shut out the other voices, because everyone has an opinion on what it is that you should be doing. And that doesn't always align with what you should actually be doing. So those are definitely key lessons. Thank you for taking the time to have this conversation with me. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you for having me. I'm really ecstatic that we had the opportunity to meet on LinkedIn. And that's why I love LinkedIn so much. It's such a nice platform to meet other professionals from across the world. And now I have the esteemed pleasure of calling you my Kenyan sister.
Yes.
I look forward to, you know, opportunity to meet you in the physical while all of this panoramic stuff is gone.
Definitely, definitely.